Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, brothers and sisters, friends and guests. I am Imam Shahid Abdullah, African Malalian American Creole, and I'm the host of this show, this program, leading us to a better understanding after where we are and what we are about in this in America. The name of the show, the program, is Inheriting the Power of Mental Freedom. That's such an important subject because it's the one thing that causes all the problems we see in the world. We think it's about land because this is what they're usually fighting over. But most of it, we would say 90% of it, is about controlling the mind of the people. Because if we don't have the control of the mind of the people, you don't have control. And most leaders understand this simple point of philosophy. So their objective is to control the mind of the people. And what our program here is doing, our intent is to give back to the listener the freedom of mental of mental freedom, to have the ability that we have, innate ability, to exercise that ability, to be able to see clear in the world and what is going on in the world. Again, for those who are just tuning in, I am Imam Shahid Abdullah, the African-American Balalian Griot. And I've been researching and studying the African-American culture for over 30 years. I have some extensive independence in the studentship of Imam Wafdi Muhammad for many of those years. I've written 4 books, Spirit of Bilal, Uncovering the Scheme, Success is Automatic, and The River of Gold. All of these books come from my research that I've done over the years and some very important issues that we as African Americans, we must get a hold of and be able to utilize all our potential for our benefit. Today, we're going to look at the subject of this evening, it's the scheme. Divide and conquer. Male versus female. Destruction of the family. We're going to use a great deal of this evening discussing this particular subject because it's so important that we as African Americans get a hold of, on this particular issue, that we find ourselves not only in odds with other cultures, such as the European American culture and other cultures in and out of the country, even from Africa, other places, we find ourselves in a great deal of conflict and confusion with our mates, our female and male. We find that to be a very taxing kind of a situation because much of the progress of a people depend on the cooperation between those two entities. And when those two entities are not cooperating, it's the culture or the society of which they belong cannot move at the rate that is the innate ability have in place for them to move at. So that's a very important issue. Not only is it an important issue for us in terms of African Americans and what's happening with us, it's important to know how that is used against us, is used to keep us from making the progress we want to make over the years. It has dampened our ability to come together. It has dampened our ability to think of doing something for ourselves because we don't have that cohesiveness between the male and female that's required for progress of a species, required of a for progress of a group, organization, that male-female dynamics has to be in play. And then once that's in play and it's working well, then that particular group can move forward pretty easily. But when that's not in play and not working well, that group then loses that ability to make the progress necessary. And we find, in much of our research, we find that this is one of the major causes of the African-American people not being able to move forward. We are told many different things about how we can move forward if we do certain things, and we're usually told those things by another culture who is the very same culture that put us in this particular position. So, and looking at that particular subject tonight, we're going to start by defining what that is. We're going to define what that means so we all are on the same page when we're talking about male and female. Then we'll be able to look at some of the things that are going on in the world today, which affects us a lot more than we think it affects us in terms of that relationship, that particular relationship between the male and female, the husband and wife primarily, and how our decisions are made and how we can't move forward as a people because of that simple dynamic within the household is not together. And it is not that it was always not together. It's that we have to come into the understanding that we are a new community, a new people on the planet Earth, a new culture. And that being a new culture, we don't have the ability to call on our ancestors and speak with them directly. And they tell us what the mistakes and what are the problems and move forward with their information. We don't have that ability. We haven't had that ability for quite a while. And when we were developing it, the European culture took upon itself to deny that particular relationship between the historical and the present, the relationship between the cultures, how we reproduce the knowledge and bring it forth for the next generation to use to move into the future. We've run into that in a way that we have to begin to straighten out our own affairs. We're going to, as I said, begin with the most obvious of this talk tonight, the male and female, and how do we get to this point, and from what point did we come? It's very important, as a once intelligent writer and scholar said, you have to know where you came from in order to know where you are and where you're going. And you have to have this kind of understanding. Some say you must know your history, or you're doomed to repeat the problems that history produced for you. It's very important to all of us that we begin to look deep into what is this relationship about, the male and female. One thing we can be sure of, that our problem dealing with the male and female in the household, in the family, will not be solved by the European American. Will not be solved by the European American. No matter how much money they give our household to survive, and at any rate, that's the taxpayer's money in the first place. But they use that as a way to continue controlling the mind of our people, and they use the control of the mind as the backbone, the foundation on which to build their concepts and theories and what they do throughout the rest of the world. The impact of the European American on the African American didn't just in slavery, chattel slavery, and on the fields, picking cotton and those things. It didn't end there. The impact they have, we see it daily, and many of us see it so much so that we can barely do anything. We feel helpless. Every time we see a problem, we want to do something, and most we can do is complain. We don't have the strength, we want to say, and I guess the more militant African-American people would say, we don't have the strength, the courage to go on and be willing to give our lives to change this life, to start that kind of revolution necessary in some cases to change the outcome or the situation. I want to begin at the beginning of man, of male and female. And I want to use the text that we are most common with, those of us who are of the religion of Islam or have some knowledge of it. I want to just use what the Quran says and that aspect about the male and female. And I'm also going to use what it says in the Bible about the male and female relationship. It's it's important to figure out what is this, what is going on that we can't solve our own problem. Now, we've been out of slavery for a little over maybe 200 years, and it said that really, those of us who realized the history, we really was out of it in 1776. But that's when we won our independence. But the Emancipation Proclamation that Abraham Lincoln wrote, it gave the working slaves an opportunity to leave that condition and not be, by law, for leaving that situation. That was in 1863. So even those from that time to now, we have to look at that time that passed. How much control do we have over our lives? And I'm offering to you the argument that's presented in the Quran and in the Bible about the situation. Start out in a way that some of us may not grasp it at first, but after we think about it and read it ourselves and develop it, we'll begin to see what this is about. In the Quran, we have in Nisa, Surah Nisa, we have where the statement is, O mankind, fear your Lord. Now, this is one interpretation I'm reading here. There are several English interpretations of that, but both of them say the same thing. O mankind, fear your Lord who created you from one soul and created from its mate and dispersed from both of them many men and women, and fear Allah, and to whom you ask one another, and from the womb, indeed Allah is over you. And of course, Hector has a very similar phrase. Only difference he may say down here, he says, your guardian Lord. Just from a single person, he uses in terms. He created from a single person. But all mankind is constant, created from a single person of like nature. He says of like nature, which is slightly not different, but it adds a little more understanding to the origin, to the part that was I read the first time. But this begins to move into a idea that once we grasp this idea, we can see how the manipulation of the male and female becomes the most crucial point of in controlling the people. You see how that will be able to unfold. Once people understand this, then they know how to manipulate the masses. Once they understand that what this is talking about, and many of us, those of you who have been blessed to be able to come through the Nation of Islam and was able to receive some instructions on how to look at the world and how to look at language from Imam Rashdi Muhammad, you have an idea about this situation, what this is talking about. The one overall picture, first let me talk Genesis. Genesis 1 through 27, it says God created man. He created mankind and in his own. And then he says, so God created mankind in his own image. In the image, God created man, created them, his mate, and female, and male and female. He created them. The motion of the wording here in the Genesis gives you an idea that there's one and then there's two, then there's more. It's the same way in the Quran. It really doesn't change in terms of what value it has. What it may change is that you may only have one, you may only read one and never read the other, so you won't be able to relate the two. But they're both basically saying the same thing. Now, image in the Bible sometimes is some readers understand that to mean that man is like God, in the sense of his own characteristics. If you look at man, you're looking at God in essence. Some take it that far. But, and they use that particular verse to be able to convince other people that man is the image of God. And once they can convince the people of that, then they can convince the people that they, who are taking on that understanding, is that they are the children of those people. So therefore, they are the ones who are from God, so all other people should worship them. And that brings in another point that where this ethno-religion comes in play. Ethno-religion is what is turning the world in such turmoil right now, because ethno-religion talks about when the ethnic group connects itself with the Creator and says it's from the Creator, or the Creator pre-created them, their group, their culture, to rule the rest of the world. And the rest of the world is supposed to follow that group according to their understanding. That all comes from this concept of image, that they believe they're in the image of God. At least they teach that they're in the image of God. Now, man, as explained, there was a poet, an American poet by the name of Archibald Leach. He was born in 1892, and he passed in 1982. He was an American poet, and he wrote, and one of his poems, he wrote that the only thing about a man that is a man is his mind. Everything else can be found in a pig, a horse, or any other animal. That's what Archibald Lee said, the poet. And those of us who have been blessed to come through the understanding the teachings of Imam Muhammad, he said this means that man means mind. Man means mind. Now, these two men were living at different times, but in America, but different times. And they came through this understanding, perhaps independently, or they didn't know each other, so independently, or some kind of collaboration between the knowledge. One person can study something and find the knowledge of something else. But the point is that the mind being mentioned here is talking about the essence of the human being. The essence of the human being is the mind. That's man means mind. So when we're reading these scripture, and if we understand that to talk about the mind as being the product that's made from the creation, and that how it was created. Now, in the understanding of Imam Muhammad, he explains it clearly, that the human being, the mind is created through the five senses of the physical human being. The physical human being is created, and through the five senses, the sense of sight, hearing, taste, touch, sound, through those senses, the human being takes in the creation, the rest of this creation, and that helps to formulate the spiritual aspect of the human being, which is the mind. The mind is not physical, but it's created from the physical. So when we look at these parts about the mind and the creation, when Allah says, or God says, he created man, created the mind to be the essence of the creation. And we know in both texts, we find that this man, this creature, comes in the eye of the creator, the vicegerent, or the one who really is over the other aspects of the creation, although he's from the creation. This is somewhat of an idea that many people come up with, but when they get in the public, they don't express this idea. Now, we know we have more than five senses. Most people understand that because you have the sense of timing. That's when you wake yourself up in the morning because your body has gotten used to getting up at a certain time, or you almost can sense when it's time to eat, or your body gives you that sense of time and sense of balance. Those are the senses, and many more senses the human being has. But these five senses that I spoke of are the ones that are directly impacting the formation of the mind. Now, once we understand that's how the human being is created, then we can begin to feel our way through the scripture that says, God created man, male and female. He created man from what? One. Man is one. Man is one. Now, the male and female, it's like a compatible separation, a compatible difference. The male doesn't exist without the female. The female doesn't exist without the male, although they are different. The male and female are different. There's a compatible difference. The difference is a necessity in order for them to create them, in order for them to create more than themselves, in order for man to go into the next development of humanity, of developing humanity. The male and female must be physically different, yet they're one and the same. They're from the same spirit. They're from the same oneness. They're from the same creation. But in order to reproduce and continue to grow, there has to be a difference. But that difference can't be a difference that they are one from another. That difference has to be one to another. The male and female must come back together in order to reproduce. In order to reproduce so that the human being can continue to grow. Now, this is not just with human beings. This is with all creatures. Creatures have to have a way of reproduction, reproducing, or producing the next generation. And it's done through this simple pattern. Once we see this as a simple pattern, and the idea of this pattern is to reproduce, is to be productive in a way that we are biologically reproducing ourselves. And once we are able to reproduce ourselves, then all the other things that the man can do, the human being, the mind can do, comes into play. We can become scientists over time. We can become leaders of different things over time. But the first and most important aspect, we must be able to reproduce. And this world has made this concept of reproduction such a burden on the human being that many women especially don't even want to have children, rather not have children. You hear them all the time in the media because it's a burden to them. And then the society continues to say this is a burden, that she doesn't get enough help to make this burden not as difficult as it is. Now, certainly, when we look at that theme, that way of talking, the way of delivering a message to the females and males, it tends to get them to accept the way of life that's adverse, a way of life that's different from the life they was created to be. They were created to produce life, and yet they would take the position to not produce life. Now, this is not exclusively just to women. This is also a psychology that's put into the men. I remember growing up where men saw having children as a burden. They call them crumb snatchers. That was one of the some of the language we used to use, crumb snatchers. They were a burden. So you would get a split. Some women want to have children. Some women don't want to have children. Some men want to have children. Some men don't want to have children. But the nature of the creation is that they all were created to have children, those who can. And it shouldn't be a negative. It should be a positive. But we live in a civilization that the culture educate us according to what they want, because they have control over our mind, because the mind, again, the mind is made from that contact of the physical world. The senses, the five senses, are used to help shape the mind and the thinking of the people. So what this civilization does to the African-American people is give them information in such a way that they won't think of being self-productive. They will think of being negative. They will see themselves as a negative. And they won't know how to evaluate a situation to get the positive out of it. And I'm speaking in terms of generationally speaking, one generation after the next, not just one individual. So sure, we got one or two individuals who can think positive and do some great things and things of that nature. That's true. But generationally speaking, we are caught vice that's pushing us back. To give you an idea about how the European American does this, I wrote one of my books. I talked about the concept of Jim Crow. I know you all might have heard of Jim Crow, and when you think of Jim Crow, you think of a negative, because you've been fed that idea and concept about Jim Crow negatively by the culture. That was a time of slavery. That was a time of what they said they wouldn't allow African Americans to be part of the common area, get access to the things necessary. But as we go into that, I want to also remind you now, we have the phones will be open, that those of you who have comments or who would ask questions, you will be able to do so. We're going to have some time to do that, because we want some feedback. And we're going to take a few breaks before we conclude. But the idea is to bring this to a conclusion about the male and the female, the scheme that's in play now that males are not aware of. Let me just go through this idea here for a moment about the Jim Crow and why they keep using Jim Crow as a way to put a negative aspect in the African-Americans' thinking. Jim Crow. While the European was making slaves out of the African, the creator of the universe was creating a people out of a new people, out of the same people that the world had, and out of the same people that the European had brought and put in slavery, and these people would be a people that the world had never seen before. Now, that alone would get us to thinking if we was given that way. No, they don't give us that way. They tell us about Jim Crow. We have to find and do research to find this. We are misled by the European about the stability and the potential in the African-American people. They mask it. They mask this reality with a lot of confusing issues. We're confused in understanding. The whole idea of Jim Crow was when the European found out years later, that was a big mistake on their part. what they found out is that that concept of the Jim Crow concept, which came from a minstrel idea of dancing and things of that nature, that era was the most productive era in African-American history. And it was an era in which the African-American was outproducing the European-American. And when you break it down and look at the European-American in groups of races or things of that nature, you have the German-American, you have the Irish-American, you have the Spanish-American, you have different groups. Out of those groups, the African-American was outproducing all of them, including the Chinese-American. It started a little before this, but from 1896, when they first made the law that the African-American, that segregation was constitutional, they made that into the law. They put it into the law. And it prevented the African-Americans from going into common areas, into areas where they could gain funds or anything of that nature. The banks and the stores were allowed to resist or were allowed not to service African-Americans. But what that particular time did, action did, it caused the African-Americans to turn to themselves. God-fearingly, they turned to themselves. By 1934, the African-Americans had built and opened their own and operated their own banks of 134 banks. That's more banks than we have now. African-Americans today only have about 34 banks. Now, we won't go over what happened and how that happened, because there's a definite reason how that happened, how that was put into reversal, and we will go over that at some point. But we want to sort of go to this. With assets of $13 million, dollars, and this was potentially the most powerful movement happening in America. And they were talking about up until 1896 to 1934. They had opened up towns, areas they call Little Africa towns, all the way from Seattle, Washington, down to California and out into Georgia, New Jersey. Here in New Jersey, they chartered a town for alongside New Jersey. Still, African Americans are the larger population in that town. Overwhelmingly, when I say larger, like 80%, and govern the town. They're like, we have towns and cities, Mound Bio down in Mississippi, and others all through Oklahoma. And I know they tell you a little bit about Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, in the Greenville District. They figured if they tell you a little bit, you won't look for a lot. But if you looked at the whole picture, you would begin to see that area era that they called the Jim Crow era wasn't as bad for the African Americans as they make it out to be. We were earning thousands and millions of dollars. We had African Americans had their own airplanes. They could travel throughout the country, in the world. And they had already started building their own cars. Patterson was one of the first to build his car in 1915. He built the automobile. Same time Henry Ford was selling his car. Real story about that Jim Crow era. We know they put it in place to stop us from making progress. But it was quite the opposite that happened. The African Americans built progress. And when you go to your books and your sciences, look this up. You will see. Google it on your computers. You will see how much progress the African Americans make. Don't just look at that, but acquaint it to the times, and acquaint it to what they talk about the Jim Crow era. See, the Jim Crow era was something they brought in to stop progress of the African-American people. African-American people did, according to one writer, he said they became so self-sufficient that they did what any nation would have done in that time. This proves to us that the death of Jim Crow was final. When we think of Jim Crow, we should look toward the positive progress that we had in America. That was the time that the European America was leaving us alone, wasn't attacking us as much, because they thought we wasn't going to make progress because they wasn't feeding us hand and foot. They wasn't feeding us. We were on our own. But what happened, we proved that we have that. Now, since that time, we know they put in another trick in place. Another trick they put into place was social integration. Now, there was so many things that happened on social integration that the average African-American is not even awoke to it right now. We're still living that impact, the social integration that's had on us. And the social integration was aimed at doing exactly what we are talking about today. It was aimed at destroying the family of the African-American people. Because without the family structure, there was no way to pass that progress that we was having during the 30s and during the 20s and the 50s. There's no way we could pass that on to the next generation, because the family structure was being destroyed. Generation wouldn't think that way. The next generation wouldn't think like the Ford family, wouldn't think like the other families who are developing in America. So we lose the value of our wealth that we had developed. Social integration. They sold us social integration to be beneficial, but social integration proved the worst thing that possibly could happen to African-American people. I know someone would say, well, we go to schools. We had schools. During that time that they called segregation, they made it so negative, but we had schools. I remember one of the greatest experiences I got as a young adult. When I graduated high school, 61, I went to 1961. I went to Winston-Salem State College, university now, in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Now, this was 61. And when I got there, now I come from a town and road in New Jersey, which is a small town and is basically an integrated town, but it's segregated because one side African Americans live on, the other side European Americans live on. And we mingle somewhat in school. But what happened is that when I got to North Carolina and looked at Winston-Salem, which was basically segregated, still in the segregated stage, I was absolutely surprised, pleasantly surprised, of the progress African-American people were making. We didn't hear those stories up in the North about the progress African-American people were making. They didn't read to tell us those stories. When I got to Winston-Salem, North Carolina, I saw schools, high schools, grade schools, all with African-Americans, graduating, colleges, universities, all of those things were built, banks, stores, by African Americans. Now, they don't tell us those stories. They didn't tell us those stories in the school I went to, and most of the people I talk with, they all basically agree that they haven't gotten those stories either to no degree. But what that does, it dampens your feeling and your self-image. We don't develop a self-image about ourselves. We don't have a positive history. Even if they don't tell us a negative history by telling us no history, that absence creates a concept of obsolescence that is out of date. It doesn't work. You don't think Black history means anything. You don't think of your culture means anything. This is the condition we were put in. Certainly, as time goes on and we begin to pay more attention to what really was happening, we begin to learn about the conditions And we have to reverse those conditions. Now, our women and our men have been put at odds against one another. They do it in such a subtle way, we don't realize that this is being done. They will promote a woman, an African-American woman, before African-American man in many aspects. And she's qualified. But in fact, both of them are qualified. But the point is that they begin to lean toward the woman. Now, then they decided to make rules and laws to give the family more money if the male is not in that family. They didn't encourage marriage. They discouraged it during the what they call the welfare for years. All of that was designed to break down the structure of the family. They know the reality of a weak family. They know the reality of not having a family that can grow. But with that, I'm going to open up the phones and give you the opportunity to ask any questions or make any comments before we go into the next. I don't see any hands up. Okay. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to take a short pause, and then we'll come right back.
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you, the one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. Thank you so very much. I am want to just the note here to make sure we cover an area that is so important. Let me take a call here. Area code 914. Area code 914.
Assalamu alaikum, Nam Shahid.
Wa alaikum assalam. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good. Alhamdulillah. Would you give us some background on Jim Crow? You know, Jim would be a male. That is Crow,
mm-hmm.
Black.
Right.
Give us some history on that, how that came about, Jim Crow.
Yeah, actually that was a minstrel show. It was a minstrel show. And they would paint their faces black, and it had a song to go with it, "Jump Jim Crow," and it was a form of entertainment. What they did, they just took that form of entertainment and put it into the reality of the people. That song wasn't developed for that; it was developed for entertainment. But they saw the opportunity to use that entertainment that the European, and most of those minstrels were European, and they used that to make fun of the African-American people. Then later on, the law just wrote it in as the Jim Crow era, as the Jim Crow time when they had segregation, preventing the African American from joining and living in any part of the country or that they chose. That was an era. See, they used those things such as symbols and signs, and they put some meaning to them. They don't just leave them in the form of the sign or the symbol. They put some meaning to them to get another impact out of that. The greater impact they get out of the Jim Crow era is to make African-American people believe they were segregated, to make them believe they were subjugated. During that whole period of time, we were doing nothing. We were just doing, we were just held down by European-Americans, prevented from becoming great producers. They want us to believe that. That's why they use that. And whenever they talk about that particular time between 1896 and to the time, actually not up to the 60s, to that time, they use that time to talk about negative impact that the Jim Crow had on African-American people. They almost make themselves out of heroes when they use that language. They're saying, we recognize there were some bad European people who did this to African Americans. They brought this Jim Crow era in and kept them from doing things and so forth and so on of that nature. When a young African American student sitting in a classroom listens to that, okay, he sees the problem, but now he still has a negative impact that we could have done more, we could have done better if they weren't pressing us down. They was keeping us from advancing. Now they would get in their mind this image of the European oppressing them, the European American oppressing them, so their energies and their thinking will go toward defending themselves or preventing or trying to retaliate for that oppression that the European did to them. They spend most of their time thinking about that, rather than you looking at that time period. Look at all the progress our people made. The progress our people made, rather than create this vengeful feeling of retaliation, it would create a feeling of achievement. It would motivate them. It would motivate the young people in the African-American schools to become more productive because they know it was possible. And then the European-American has a problem with saying, okay, if we agreed that your people are making this progress during that particular time, even more than the Chinese and everybody else was making, what happened? Then they have to go again and look at what the European put in place in terms of the law, in terms of integration. They didn't force us to integrate. They didn't force us to integrate with them, but they forced their people to integrate because that was the quickest way that they could think of cutting down the progress of the African-American people. They had to stop our progress because we was doing it in the same way they did it when they come together and work together and develop things for themselves. We were doing it in that way during that period of time. They had to somehow stop that. When that report went out in 1932 in the Negro Market, talking about how the African-American people were making progress like nations would do, that's when they began and changed the direction. That's when they got control of our school system. We were in control of our school system during that time. They would give us not much money, give us a third or a fourth of the money that the state or the government sends to the education system, and they'd keep the rest and develop their school system. But we still were developing during that time. And if you get the opportunity to speak to some of the people from that time that's in their 70s and 60s and 80s, they would tell you that from that area, they would tell you how much better they were educated than the children are being educated now, and that during that particular time. They don't want to see the positive. They don't want to accent the positive. They want to show the negative of a time, and that's why they keep that concept of Jim Crow going. We need to just strike it out of our thinking, strike that whole idea of Jim Crow out of our thinking, and look at those periods of time of when we made progress, and then look at look at what happened after that in terms of this social integration. Now we have another situation we have to work into a better situation like our forefathers did during that era. They continued to make us think was so negative. But our forefathers worked and developed during that era because they follow their cultural values. And the European American knows that. The cultural values are what help people to move forward. And because the European is feeding us our cultural values today, we don't get these values that tell us how we can make progress as a community, as a group, as a race. They tell us we can only make progress if we get on the back of their wagon. They let us ride a little bit down the street till they decide to push us off. But the key is for us to look at the progress that was made by our foreparents, and we can duplicate that. We can duplicate that. We can duplicate that valuable era that we lived in. That's not a situation that can't be revisited. It's all about the mind. It's all about the mind. That we was talking about earlier, that man means mind, and all it is a man is the mind. That's just mm-hmm. the mind. And if we could see that, if we could just see that it's all about the mind, then we can reverse all this stuff that social integration brought in on us, and we can make progress. We won't fear the idea if we alone, we won't make progress. We don't want to cause other people on the planet to disappear. We don't have no problem with the European-American living as long as we can live. We just want equal protection under the law because we pay the same taxes. We do the same things they do relevant to what the Constitution is about. So we should be able to have the education system that educate us positive the same as the education system educates their children positively. They give themselves a positive education of themselves and don't give the African Americans a positive education of themselves. African Americans become educated, but educated to serve, not educated to lead. Even when we get a president, he's not really leading the country. He's serving the desires of the leaders of the country, which are the families who control the wealth, the families who control the power. That's what he has to serve and follow. He can't make decisions for the people. See, a president is supposed to be able to make decisions for the people. But our presidents over the years have been working for the people who had control of the money and power. Those are the people they represent. That's why they keep this concept they call the Electoral College. Electoral College is not good for the people, not the masses. The Electoral College is only you have 574 people who make the decision on who's going to be the president and vice president of the United States. That means they can be more selective. That means now they don't have to worry about the American population voting in somebody they don't have control of. Everybody who runs for office, they have to come under scrutiny of these people who are in control. And then when the six or seven people run or whatever number it is, and then the people vote, when they vote, they're not voting for those people. They're voting for the Electoral College to decide on who they're going to elect. And the electorate of the people is those 500-some-odd people, 70-some-odd people. They do not have to elect the person that the people vote for. They're on their own. This is part of the rules and regulations of the Electoral College. And what they do is try to get the people who are in charge of giving their vote and giving their ticket. You know, they have to get on the ticket after the election. They go to Washington about 2 or 3 months later, then they put their ticket in to say who the president is, not who the people voted in. And that's why you can get these lopsided elections. You get one time that Hillary Clinton had all the votes, had the majority of the votes, but she lost the election. So did Gore. He lost the election because the Electoral College voted for the other person. They put their ticket in for the other person. And that's the way this country is established now. Now, they will try to make us think that it's a democracy. They'll try to make us think it's the will of the people. That's one of the biggest fallacies that we probably can find in this day and time. This country was founded on the belief of by the people. And in fact, in the Declaration of Independence, it clearly states that the people are considered the governed, and the governed has a right to select who governs them. And if the people who govern them do not follow the tenets of the Declaration of Independence, which says all men are created equal with unalienable rights, with life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, if they don't support that, then the people have a right to throw that government out. That's in the Declaration of Independence. But they don't talk about the Declaration of Independence. And, you know, I don't know if I ever mentioned it to on any of the shows or any of my talks, that I was at a judge's, a lawyer's indoctrination, a lawyer's being sworn in. And they do not, and I've seen it on YouTube too, that they do not swear in to the Declaration of Independence. They swear to uphold the Constitution. That's what they swear to uphold, the Constitution. And the Constitution was written 8 years after the Declaration of Independence, after we won our independence from Great Britain. It wasn't what caused it. They didn't have it. It didn't exist. What they had was the Declaration of Independence. And then they had the Confederate. They had the Confederate Confederacy, the Articles of the Federation. They had that. And that is what they went by, the Constitution. And in the Constitution, they put the Electoral College in it, so that they can control the people at the top, who's going to be elected. See, this is what the country is about. And they don't like to, it's not hidden information. It's just not talked about, except for those European Americans or other Americans who decide to come out against someone. They'll talk about it then. But this is what the country is about. The majority of the people are not willing to do anything about it. They're not united enough to do anything about it. They're not together enough. The leaders of the country continue to work to keep people divided, one against another. They don't care about, in their terms, and you hear street language say black and white. They don't care nothing about that. And people of color, that don't mean nothing to them. What means to them is the power that they have, and they want to keep that power to control the wealth that runs through America and the world. And if they don't control, if they're not able to control that, You will never hear from them. But they have to control it in order to live the lives they live, in order to ride around in gold carriages and have diamonds on around their neck and all these outrageous things that they have in the life they live. Now, I'm not just talking about people who go out and earn money and make a lot of money. And those are relatively new people. That's what they call new money. Now, I'm talking about the people who make the decisions, who just like in 1828, I believe, it was 1824, 28, when Bismarck Germany, what was now called Germany, and they met with America, Europe, all the countries got together, and they decided on how they were going to divide up the world. They split Africa in all these different groups. And each the French took part, the Germans took part. They all took a piece, and they turned those countries into their wealth, took all the wealth out of the country to build up their countries. And this is what they did. This is what they do. And they use this system of governing the people, keeping the people off guard as to their manipulating them, and how they manipulate the masses. There's some European Americans out here who are trying to change this this electoral college situation, but they're having a tough time because the people won't get behind it. The people are so divided against one another. The masses are the people I'm talking about. The people who control this, they're not divided at all. And if they do have a discussion or have something that the other is not concerned with, they won't let the public know that. But the public is divided. You don't have to be a European-American or African-American. African-American, European-American in the same government. should have the same rules and regulations according to the law. Shouldn't be any problems dealing with that. It should be united in the sense of living the life that America has available for them to live. It's a free market system. We shouldn't be deprived of anything. Everything should be available to everyone. Not keeping people fighting one another. Do they have to keep the European against the African-American and keep the African-American against the European in order to keep the people divided? They do not want to see unity in the masses. This is why they fear Trump so much. Donald Trump, the one who's trying to unite the people behind him,
mm-hmm.
they know if you can get enough people to vote on you, they'll get you in. Because unity is the strength. But what they do, the leaders do, they keep us divided. And what we as members of this society must begin to learn to collaborate on the basis of equality and on the basis of producing a future that we all can tolerate. If we get into that mode, then we can start to make some changes that's beneficial for all. The way the world is going now, it appears that America may be in a big, big hole that it might not be able to get out of. And America has been brought to that doorstep by another group. Another group who have been trying to do this thing for centuries. A moment ago we spoke about the ethno-religious groups. Those are not ethno-religious group is not a people who serve God in the essence. They have their religion is that God created them to be in charge. That's what they believe. Their ethnic group. They believe their ethnic group is divine, and they live their life that way. And they pass that kind of thinking from generation to generation, from nationality to nationality. It has nothing to do with the color. You remember years ago, I'm sure you probably heard this, brother, that and those others of you who heard Imam say this. He said that Shaitan changed his head like you change clothes. He said it doesn't make any difference. He was trying to point out to us that the Shaitan that's affecting the world has nothing to do with the color of the skin, has nothing to do with the nationality, has nothing to do with those things. It has to do with the cultural development of a people who have taken this concept of ethno-religious in terms of making themselves being superior to other ethnic groups. And the other ethnic groups will serve them because they have been divinely appointed. That's where the house of Shaitan is. This is why you get people who live that philosophy. You think Adolf Hitler, that's the same thing Adolf Hitler did. He didn't do anything different than just what I just said. And others did the same thing, not just him, but others did that too. The reality that Imam had pointed out to us, that this is what causes the world to go around. And we have to begin to learn who we are and become a people who can move forward based on our knowledge of self and knowledge of the things around us. And that's not an easy task because we've been conditioned to think the way the European American desires for us to think. We've been conditioned to almost implode if we start thinking about ourselves as being self-sufficient, as being capable of doing the same thing all other people can do. If we start thinking that kind of thought, then we are considered to be anti-something. You know, the European American quickly would say, you're a hater if you tell him that you love yourself. If you say to a European American that you love yourself, you love African Americans, they would think you were a hater of them.
Mm-hmm.
They can't even take that idea of a person could love him, love God, love himself, love people, all the same. You must love them first. And if you don't love them, you are a danger to them. And this is the kind of thinking that we are in the midst of. And that is what we are talking about basically today, relevant to male and female. The reason we can't get our tracks out the sand is because it's male-female dilemma, this battle between the male and females of our community. We have let the European American put so much on us in terms of who we are and what we are doing that the male and female are against one another in the African American community. Not all of them, but enough of them that progress is not being made in the way it could be made. Progress is not going to be made until the male and female of the African American community see themselves as one. Just like when we started the program with that surah and Nisa about God creating the human being, then from the one that created many, and mm-hmm. how we explain that's talking about one is not exclusively separate from the other. It means that one is interdependent of each other. And if that does not happen, then neither exists. There is no such thing as a male or female independent of each other. It can't exist. They have to come together. And they're designed to come together because they look at each other. You see, they fit. A glove fits on a hand. The male and female, they're physically designed to come together like a part to a puzzle. And that causes reproduction. And we're supposed to be honoring that, not fighting against that. We're supposed to be honoring that, not like it's a chore that we must do or we won't be considered a human being, not like that, but as an obligation to humanity of ourselves. That we are grateful that we're here because that process brought us here. So we should be making sure that we continue that process in order for those who to come will be able to come. And that has to be done with the male and female together. It can't be done by, you know, just a male or female. And I hear a lot of talk, especially in the Muslim community, about this idea about multiple marriages and not. And in reality, we didn't invent none of this. That wasn't invented in Islam. That none of that was invented in Islam. The evidence shows, the facts show. And remember that the Quran was the last of the books. You had the Torah, you had the Bible, then you had Quran. And in none of those books that came before Quran did you find a out-and-out pro or con against the way people should be married or have wives, more than one wife. And in the Bible you say you have more than one, have most of one wife, have 10, 13 wives and things of that nature. So so on in the Torah. Because man didn't come into this concept of having one wife until the Greeks. This is the history of this idea. The Greeks did it because they wanted to make a stronger army, and they needed the man to pay taxes and be part of the army rather than raise another family. They would not let the man raise another family because they wanted that man to put his extra energy in developing the Greek political structure. That's where that idea comes from. It doesn't come from any of the religious books. None of the religious books talk about that. It comes from the Greeks. And then the Romans picked it up from them And then, of course, when the Christians became Roman Catholics, they picked it up. They picked it up from the Roman army because that was the best way that the Greeks and the Romans could build their army and make their army strong. And you know what they did with the so-called surplus women? The surplus women that didn't have a husband after the war, they had no one to take care, help them take care of their children. You know, they would put them out and started another system called prostitution. And the state would be in charge of that. They put the woman to work in terms of a prostitute because no man was taking care of them. So they would put them to work, bring them in, put them to work, and then they would use that money to help build a state again. When men and when civilizations all the time, they were taking on women. You go back, you go to all the different tribes in Africa, all over the world, you will find they never had a problem with having more than one wife or more than one family. That's what they was after. Because the more families they had, the more children they had, the more men they had, the stronger that independent family and tribe or culture was. And that's what the Greeks did. And now you get when the churches entered that concept, that argument, the churches under the Catholics entered the concept and made it mandatory that you could only have one wife. Made it mandatory that you could only have one wife, and it was you couldn't divorce a woman. Even though the Bible and other books said you can. They said no, you can't. Against their law. So they use the same principles that the Romans and the Greeks were using. The male pay more to the Catholic Church than they would be doing if they had another family. See, somebody has to pay for another family. And the man, if he decides to have another family, he has to pay for it. Nobody will take care of his children, take care of his own children. So, but then the church saw that as an advantage for them to build the church up. And then the church, primarily the Catholic Church, this is in their books now. This is not guesswork here. This is what I read in their books. This is what they have. They said, in order to make this a stronger foundation, they created this concept of love. Now, this is not to say we shouldn't love each other. That's not created this concept of love, which is really sort of far out when you get to think about it, as if the people didn't love each other before as human beings. But they created this concept that the man and the woman should love each other exclusively of anyone else. And then they said that becomes a triangle between the love of the woman and the male and God. That's the triangle that they That concept, going back to that concept of three in one they had before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what that did, that created a society that continuously have people that are lonely because there's so many people who are not part of another relationship. And those people who are not part of another relationship, what do you do with them? They develop this loneliness, this society of the psychology of the people changes. Because they don't have a relationship with other human beings on an intimate level. Then they have to go back to that old scheme they had to develop prostitution. And the women weren't at fault of that either. Now, a lot of people blame women for this prostitution. Talk about how far back prostitution goes. The system of it was set up and designed because there was a surplus. The surplus was that men could only marry one woman. That created other women, because you know in most societies women outnumber men. That's not just a trick of the, not like a card game or nothing. That's a reality. Mm-hmm. But because of that, now you get women who do not have families. So now even now you get in a situation now, you get this selfishness that divides. This is mine. So you cannot have it. Now you get this conflict going on in the society. When before that, before those laws that the Greeks and the Romans put in place, they never even thought about that. They never even thought about it because it didn't come up. So when it came up in Islam, which came after the Bible, 1,000 years so after the Torah, the situation came up where the Muslims had battles and they, men were being killed, and some of them had families they was leaving. So the Quran, Allah, remedied that problem in order to make sure that some of the women had someone to help them out because their husbands were killed and she might not be able to make a living or something, or orphans who were left. And some orphans were young teenagers. It says to the men, the instruction goes to the men. It says you can marry more, you can marry one, two, or three, or some even say four. But in the conversations, and but you know, one would be better because you have everything you earn and do, you have it for yourself. That would make one wife better than having more than one wife. But now you got more to work with. Because if you had more wives, you have to share with them. But what about the women? What about cutting down this concept of prostitution, putting the women out for sale because they don't have a man? See, that was a remedy for that. That was a remedy to prevent that as much as possible. So the Quran didn't come to introduce that. That was already in play. It came to regulate a situation, not mandate, but regulate. And because of that, it stands in the place of being able to help the society regulate itself. But the problem still exists. The problem of more women existing than men, it still exists.
Thanks.
And it's going to have to come to the day when we figure out a way to regulate that, or a way to get that where it balanced. Some kind of balance has to take place to keep people from feeling lonely and to themselves, and that creates in that person a sense of agonizing resentment. Agonizing resentment because they are to themselves. Now, all of them may not feel that, but you see the possibility. You see the possibility. And that possibility is what causes most of the conversations that we have as men and women to go around. But we're going to have to solve the problem. Now, I'm not just talking about Muslims. That's not aimed at the Muslim population. We have a remedy. It's there, and you don't have to exercise it, but it's there. But I'm talking about the general population. The general population is going to have to solve the problem because they do not have a remedy, because the remedy was taken from them by the Greeks and the Romans and the Catholic Church. They took the remedy from that society. This again is not about the Muslim society. It's about the society at large, the European society. They have a huge problem. They want to start developing themselves, having more children because of the self replacement fertility rate. They can't do that because if their men can only be with one woman, then that's the only way they're going to have a child. And they can only have one child a year, unless it's twins or something of that nature. But if they would take up that slack of having more than one wife or more than one family, then they would be able to keep their civilization alive. And this is the one thing that is causing the European civilization and the European culture to become extinct. That's what they're fighting against. They're fighting against becoming extinct. And now we talk about the African American many times, but we have more problems than just that. If that was our only problem, we would be in pretty good shape. But we have problems with the drugs and problems with the European killing us and all those other kind of things, killing ourselves. We have a lot of problems that we got to solve. But the European has that problem to solve. And if they don't come up with a solution, and I do believe come away with the solution, that Allah has put into the Quran for the Muslims. I believe they're going to still. I see them doing it similar now. They call it a girlfriend, boyfriend. A lady judge, she has a husband and a boyfriend, and they all are, and all of you know, awake to what they're doing. That's just leading into the idea of having more than one. See, so the problem, we as Muslims, we shouldn't be fighting against one another, male and female, about this idea. It's not even ours. We shouldn't be fighting this idea about male and female. Just if you see where the remedy can be, or you can use something to solve the remedy and you want to do that, then do that if it's within the Quran. If it's not within the Quran, then walk away from that. But there's some, the Christian, the Catholic Church, the Romans and the Christian and the Greeks have put the European people and all those who follow that culture in a dilemma that they will not be able to solve unless they use either something similar or the identical remedy that you find in the Quran. If they don't use that remedy, they're going to become more and more extinct over time. And you go get other civilizations who don't think about that, like the Chinese civilization. At one time, the Chinese civilization had to cut down on having so many children. Now they're back at it again because they got involved with the sub-replacement fertility rate, and they say, no, our young people are getting older, but we got to have a replacement for all of those. Now they're back at it, encouraging people to have children, more children now, paying for them to have more children. So are the Japanese and other countries. But we shouldn't divide ourselves. I'm talking about the African-American Muslim. I don't think the European Muslim have much problem with this. And I don't think the foreign Muslim have much problem with this. Or the African Muslim. I don't think they have much problem. But the African-American Muslim has a problem with this. And the African-Americans thus have a problem because they have the same problem that African-Americans have, African-American Muslims. But they don't have the solution. They don't have the solution. And without the solution, then that just gets to be a dire situation. It becomes more difficult and more difficult. So I think the African-American Muslim is more in a position to help educate the world and educate the population, especially our own population. Some of us like myself, I mean, I'm 81 years old. I'll be 82. We're just trying to look at the problem in terms of what could be done with those generations that's coming behind us. We're finished with that part of our lives. But it doesn't mean we should not address the issue. It does not mean we should not look at the issue as to what is going on in terms of our culture and how can we survive for generations after generations. We have to look at those issues. And we have to do it with a clear mind. We have to have our mind free to think. We can't be indoctrinated so much with the Europeans' way of life, which is so corrupted now, it's pathetic. Now, and I know it's hard to see that because we're so much part of their life. They have lost all sense of morality. And it almost seems like they can't rebound. Now, I know it's hard to see that, too, because we see them building big this and building big that. But these things, read Scripture. Scripture will point out that civilization could be looking good on the top, on the surface, and they're in the process of crumbling. But we, as African-Americans, we're going to have to come to some grips amongst ourselves. We're going to have to learn how the male and female must collaborate with one another for the benefit of us. Not for the benefit of one side or the other. The African-American male, if he's walking around here thinking he got some kind of special privilege, he definitely is out of sort because it never was set up like that. It's always a design process that the women are found in. it was designed to help that process, to make sure they have someone to help them with their lives, someone to help their children, and someone to help the orphans. And you, if you're just walking around and you got all this money and you're doing well and this family's over here starving or doing badly, that's not a good sign. That's not giving back to what Allah has given us. But it doesn't mean the African Americans should be walking around trying to, like he's in a garden somewhere picking fruit off a tree. That's not that kind of game. This is not that kind of setup. This is a reality. And if they would look and look at the dimensions of the world, they would see it as a reality. They wouldn't see this as something that the European gives to us. They would see it as a reality. And it's a reality that we can solve. We can solve. We can solve our situation. And if we solve our situation, the rest of the world will begin to come around too, because our situation is establishing moral leadership, getting back to human excellence. That's where we are coming to. We're coming to the table moving back to human excellence. We're not coming to the table to make the world more corrupt. No, we're coming to the table with human excellence, the life example of Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alaihi wasallam. We're coming to the table to make a better moral conditions for the human being and encouraging all others to do the same. And that is the best way for humanity. That's our situation. Our situation is to bring that to the forefront. And not so much to be selfish. We can't be selfish nowadays and watch the world come to pieces if we have the solution. We don't have the solution, then we just be quiet. But if we had the solution, then we are obligated. Because Allah created all the people. Regardless of what group is out there saying they're only the special people in the world, they're the only group that Allah created, and everybody else got to serve them. Regardless of that foolishness, we have a better understanding than that. And we have been led to a solution that could help the world in striving for human excellence, striving to look at the moral consciousness as being that which we should stand on, which we should live by. But I know I went around a long time answering your question, brother, but we quick break here, and then we go come back and we go wind down because we're getting into the time. But if you got another point to your question, your line is still open. When you come back, you can make another point, or any of the others. You have pro or con. You may not agree with what I'm talking about. If you don't, you could. That's the idea. The idea is for us to challenge each other in our thinking, challenge each other in our ways. We don't just sit on the side and let things happen. No, we don't believe something, challenge it. We're free. And the only way we can make progress is by challenging what we don't believe or what we do believe to make it better. This is what we're about. We're not about not working and collaborating together. That's what we're about. That's what the human beings are about. That's what one of the main things is, not a principle, but it's looked like a principle because it's mentioned with the principles quite often. It's a shura benahum. Shura benahum is just that. That's just what that is. Come to the table with your mind to help the solution. If you go come to the table with the same thing I got, there's no sense of coming to the table. Why would we come to the table and everybody got the same thing? We go about our business. No, we come to the table because we got different ideas, different concepts, and different thinking on things we should do. And we have to discuss those things. We have to bring them into some kind of working position where we all can benefit from it. That's what progress is about. But let me take this break now and get this announcement in. I hope it's the right one here. Let me go up here.
All right.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Supreeta Hadi, host of Al Islam and Focus Learning Lab here on AM360, inviting you to join me Saturday evening at our new time, 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, as we continue to share inspiring and thought-provoking Islamic education. Inshallah, I will see you in the lab at our new time, 5 to 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Saturday evening. Assalamu alaikum, and thank you kindly.
Thank you so much. I know we normally have a guest on too, and we're going to continue with that process each week. And I encourage all of you to come back and listen to our guests, because some of them have some very, very interesting point of views that we need to look at. And but this week we had some we just wanted to go over some things, and we knew we were going to take up most of the time just to go over some of those things. So, but any of you who have a comment or question, just push the one on your phone, and you could come in with your question or comment. See a number of people on here.
There's a question has been on one of the Blog Talk Radio programs for a few months now. The question is, why African-American Muslim men and women don't want to get married? Now, based on what you're saying, we have the solution to our situation. What is the solution?
Yeah, you say African American men don't want to get married?
Men and women.
Men and women. Well, the reason we got the solution, but the reason that they are in that state of mind because they're still following the European culture. The European culture has made the man not even recognize his manhood anymore. It made the woman not recognize her, and she doesn't even honor femininity as being a female and being a mother. And she doesn't even honor the fact that in a marriage, in a relationship, she's been given the power, because this society has made her believe that the male physically dominates her so much that he makes her into almost like a bale of straw, and she doesn't like to be dominated like that. But if she, for the Muslim now, I'm not talking about all African Americans, if they use this process, they would be all right too. For the, when it comes down to a male and female discussion, married and not married, if the discussion and argument or the situation gets so hot that she sees that it can blow over, she's given the authority and the power to negate it. How is that? She's giving that power just by saying, okay, you're right, and move on. She don't have to even argue the point anymore. That doesn't change his situation, but once he cools down and sees what she has done, he begins to think differently. And it works there all the time. The women are not using that power, I think. This is my thought. I don't think they use that power. I think they have been conditioned by the Europeans to tell them to argue and argue and argue and fight and fight and fight, no matter who your husband is. And if he hits you or if he gets bad, I'll come and lock him up. You see, they have conditioned the woman to disagree with her husband on and on and on, when actually Allah has given her the power to turn it off. And if she turns it off, see, he's losing that, the male is losing that. He can't turn it off. He can't turn that emotional, the emotional level is very difficult. Once you get in that emotional spirit, it's hard to get out of it. But the woman has that power, because she's been given this emotional control that she can get into an argument and be hot as fire in there. And she can say, okay, I'm finished with this. And it's over. But men have a problem. They got to go to blows. They have to pull their guns or whatever, controlling their emotions to that degree. But the woman can control her emotions. She's been given that in her childhood, the time she was raising her babies and everything else was building in her this power to control her emotions. And in doing so, she controls the situation. So that's a solution to some of the problems that the men and women not wanting to marry, because they can't solve their problems. They can't get along. See, if I get married, I got to put up with this. Or if she get married, she ain't going to put up with that. Man telling me how much money I could make and all that. They go through those things. So they don't want to be together. And this plays right into the hands of the European American, because his goal, their goal, is to bring about the extinction of the African-American people without the African-American people even realize what's happening. And if we're not having babies, time out. If it's not having babies, that's the only way, only way we can go from one generation to the next to have babies. No other way. There's no magic wand. There's no flipping, no bubble gum, no nothing. Just having babies. I don't want to just have babies. They say that you're part of the problem, not the solution. If you're not having babies, you're part of the problem. If you're not taking care of the babies, you're part of the problem. That is why when we started this conversation earlier, we went over the ayah from Quran about Allah creating man, and the verse in the Bible that says God created man, one and two, and them. And then we went over how Imam Muhammad pointed out how man means mind, and also Archie MacLeish, a poet from years ago, said that all that is a man, that is a man, is his mind. Everything else could be found in a pig or a horse. See, so that supports that different people from different eras were thinking about the same thing, which encourages us to understand these verses in the Quran and in the Bible, that man does mean mind. And part of the mind is the emotional aspect. And that what you have, the control emotional aspect, is the conscious. The conscious. The will. If you will to control your emotions, you can. And see, and when the women are really teaching their children, they're teaching their children that very power they have, how to control, how to become morally strong, filling their conscience. This is a very important aspect in human development. And how are we going to solve the solution? How are we going to solve the problem of men and women amongst our own African-American men and women not wanting to get married? The only thing we can do is teach them. Teach them. Teach them the better solution. Teach them. Talk with our young people. And first, we got to believe it ourselves. If we don't believe that it's a good thing to have children, there's no way we can convince somebody else that that's a good thing. If we don't believe it's a good thing and that God ordained this, we wouldn't even be here. If this has not happened, we wouldn't be existed if this wasn't proper, if this wasn't the way of God to do that. We have to pass this knowledge, because the European is not going to do it. European American. He's been responsible for our well-being ever since he put us brought us over on the slave ships. I do want to remind you, too, there's another program following this in about 10 minutes or so, courtship and marriage. That's another program. That's a program that's talking about courtship and marriage. There you go. Get some of those brothers and sisters you know what to say about that. Listen to that program. That program talks about courtship and marriage. It's a very important thing that we start taking charge of our own emotions, taking charge of our own thinking, taking charge of our own behavior between each other, between male and female. We are in charge of that. God has given us the complete control over our own selves, our own mind. And the mind is what's it about. This is why we name a program the Inheriting the Power of Mental Freedom. It's so important. Inheriting the power of mental freedom. If we're free to, we can build the kind of world we have to build. We were just talking about a situation today, but there are other things we can talk about and that you may want to talk about. And you should drop a line to AM360. We call in and ask them, do you like to talk about a particular program? Or if you just want to I'm going to give you my number, and then you can write me if there's something you want on this portion and what's to talk about, okay? My number is it's a Shahid Abdullah, African Malian American, Griot. And my number is 908-296-2558. Now, it'll be found on Facebook, same acronym. Also, the website, my website is buildingnewafrica.com/. You can leave your comments there, and I'll get to them on the program. We'll get the material to help buffer up this subject you want to talk about. And we have a number of people on here, so it has got to have some ideas and concepts you want to talk about that may help us in our understanding. Because we got to help each other. There's no one person. We've gotten out of that charismatic leadership mold. Imam Muhammad did a wonderful job to bring us out of that thinking, and then thinking that one man got the solution. No, and the proof of that is that one man perished. Even Prophet Muhammad had to pass. Everybody passes. So it lets us know that this is an ongoing way of life that we have to pass from one generation to the next. So when we do that, then we can continue the process that Allah has in place. He has in place Allah, God, those of you who are here, some of the brothers and sisters of the Christian faith. You know, when we say Allah, we're talking about God, the same God you say. When you say God, we're talking about the same God. He's created us to be able to progress and be able to move forward. That's what the human being is for. He created as a vicegerent of this planet that we can imagine something and use this earth and bring it into existence. This is the power that we have as human beings. And we should take advantage of that. And not only that, we should also recognize the fact that when we do make a mark in terms of being successful, then we should also help those who have not yet made that mark. Those who have not yet made that mark for them, to help them reach their potential, reach their goals and objectives. That's where the better world is going to come from. That's where the new world is going to come from. Don't doubt this process that Allah has in place. The process that he has in place is going to make a better world. It's going to make a new world. What the world has grown into is over with. They've grown into great wealth, but yet they still have not learned to use their moral consciousness enough that they don't mass murder people just because they got the power to do so. You know that's Shaitan's way of life. Mass murder people because they have the power to do so just to get a little piece of land. A new world has to come in place. We can never continue with this kind of world. The way it's in now, what's going on now, we can never continue that way. You can see it with your own eyes. Something has to give.
That's true.
So we have to be able to look at that as people and know that God has a better plan than the one that came into existence over these thousands of years, from all the way from back to Egypt to here, that came into play, now is over with. It just initiated more greed for power and wealth and domination. I know it's hard for us to see and think of it sometimes, but we are the change. As President Obama said, we are the change we've been waiting for. We are the change. And we have to start making the change within ourselves, within our family, within our friends, and everyone we get a chance to talk with that would listen. We're not going to force anything on anyone. But if they would listen, we would talk with them. And that will be able to, then we'll be able to move forward as a world, as a creation. And we don't have to, the African-American people do not have to become extinct. But don't be so foolish to think that it can't happen when it's already happened in front of our eyes, that they have Native Americans right here in this country. The Massachusetts the word Massachusetts, the state called Massachusetts, that was the name of a people who had a language, who've been living here for hundreds of years, extinct. They don't speak the language no more. You see them in a museum. You Google them. You could Google them, and they see they were here, and they're not here no more. Don't think this can't happen. And if you are a student of the Bible or Quran, you know there's many stories in both books that tell you that God exterminated people because they were disobedient. Now, all that means is that they didn't follow the rules and laws that are in the creation that the human being must follow in order to live. You have to eat food to live. If you get hungry, you must eat, or you're starved to death. Those are the regulations that God put in the to force you to live, to force you to produce, to force you to be productive. You don't drink water, you will die of thirst. Eat food, drink water, all that's forced on you. You don't make that decision. I know you think you're going down to the store to get an apple or a pear or something. I know you think that. But you're forced to do that. And if you don't do it, you'll die. That's how serious that is. If you do not eat, you will die. This is serious business that God has created here. And it's easy, but it's beautiful. When you get that apple, you love it. You bite into the apple and the juice runs down your mouth and you're so sweet. It's the best thing you can have. Why not eat it? Why not enjoy what Allah has put here for us to enjoy? It doesn't make sense not to enjoy it. But understand that there's a duty to come with it. And the duty is we must obey and try to keep reproduction in place. Work with each other. Don't try to work with the European man before you work with your own people. Try to get along with each other first, then you'll be able to get along with other people. Because we'll be able to collaborate. We can't just run to the African because we can't get along. We can't just run to the Egyptian because we can't get along. We can't just run to the European because we can't get along. No, we have to learn how to collaborate, how to go through a shurabanum. We have to learn that as a people, as a new people, created here in America.
I'm glad you mentioned
yes,
that,
brother.
Imam Bashir, sure. There's been someone has been calling it for a shura among the community for over a year now, Shura Benahum.
Wow. Wow. Over a year?
Well, we should make a move on that.
We should be making a move on doing that. And we should involve all of our African-American brothers and sisters, too. Even doesn't make any difference whether they are Methodist or Baptist. If they're willing to want a better life for our people, then we should all invite them to our coming together to collaborate for the betterment of humanity. And that should be our goal. And that's what the Shura Benahum is about. See, the Shura Benahum wasn't just for Muslims. It's for gathering of people to make progress. Because Allah created everybody Muslim. And you become conscious Muslim when you accept it. That idea that Allah created everybody to be a Muslim. But the Shura Benahum is for everybody. All groups. Even the groups that rule improperly. They use that process. They use the process of a Shura Benahum to come together and do some crazy stuff. You know, they say the gangsters have a rule that they don't come against each other, or they don't kill each other. Where did they get that from? They came to this conclusion that this is not good for our organization, so we need to do this or that. A Shura Benahum is the key to progress of any people. It's just that Allah gives it to us in the Quran and tells us straight out, sure, and his name with the five principles. It's not somewhere something separate all by itself. Sometimes when you read some of the principles, you'll be a Shura Benahum. It's very important to collaborate, to work together and talk, not be afraid to talk, not be afraid to be heard, and not be afraid to listen. We have to take courage in both of those things, talking and listening. And all the people we have on here, some more you should be talking more. We don't know what you want for the next program. So sometimes, you know, because sometimes we say things the way Allah bless us to see things, and you may see something a little different, and that may help us all. So let's start talking and asking questions, making comments. We're going to make progress. We're created to make progress. We have to believe that. Allah did not create man to fail. Created man to be successful. So we're going to be able to, we're going to have to leave off in a minute because we have another program coming in. I just want to thank you all for coming and listening. And please write down your question if you don't have one. Next time you come back, have it written down. You can start out with your questions if you wish. We go, and about 15 minutes into the show, we're going to have questions and answers. And we ask you to make it about the topic we are on, if you can. But we'll do our best with something that doesn't take us too far away from our topic. But we want to try to keep things succinct. And when we do come back together again, inshallah, just remember, that's what we're here for. We're here to talk and listen. And that's go for me and you, all of us. Talk and listen. Come to some conclusions about what's going on in the world and how we can best change the world, beginning with ourselves. That's what we have to do. So I just want to thank you all very much for coming out. And I want to
thank you, brother,
say,
man.
Alhamdulillah. And I want to thank you all, and may Allah continue to bless you. And I want to say, Rabbana atina fid dunya hasanatan wa al-akhirati hasanatan wa qina adhaban nar. Our Lord, give us the best of this world and of the hereafter, and protect us from the fire. As I greet you all in the greetings of peace, and may Allah bless us all to come to the next meeting of As-Salaam Alaikum.
Alaikum As-Salaam.